in the past 2 years, I've been working with Bomani Tayemba for the Africans, and I've been one of his promotional people, personnel the last 2 years going to Ghana. And he is the director and owner of Africa for the Africans. He's been doing this hard work. He and I have been in trenches together for 2 years, and he's been doing this hard work since 2006, taking over groups of people and waking them up to new ideas and new thoughts of about whatever they might have when they do visit the motherland, you know, going through that experience through Ghana. And so, because his dedication is based on the premises of Marcus Garvey, and he's actually doing that by taking people over there and giving them a host of different mixed of roots and culture, you know, and networking, doing business, and sending them up to people who are doing business and investments, and people from the diaspora that are living there and that have paved the way for many of us to go over there. They have gone through so much pain and so much hard work that alleviates us from going through a lot of that that pain and hard work, the work that they put done for, you know, just like people have done in the past, like our ancestors have done the same way with these brothers and sisters that have gone over there and built schools and businesses and all of these types. And so this is a great work that Brother Bomani has been doing over the years. He has a lot of connections and networks that are set up in Ghana for people who want to go there and perhaps do business, because any place that you go in the motherland or anywhere in the world, you should do your homework first, like Brother Rob was saying. You have to do, it's best to, if you're just going on a vacation, not as one thing, he's going on a vacation trip. Bomani doesn't do vacations, he does journeys. So you go over there with an open mind, and you can learn so many things. If you want to connect, if you just want to go over there and just get your foot down on the mother Africa, on the ground, that's fine and dandy too. But if you want to go over there and make those connections and get those ties, it's very important to do your preparation work, and which Africa for the Africans, they provide this a year prior to making that journey. And we have conference calls that are probably almost every 2 months, and then as it gets closer and closer to departure time, the frequency goes up to every month. On the conference call, we cover everything from A to Z to make preparations for the people on their journey. Nothing's left unturned. So he's got it down towards Ghana. He's got it down packed. He's got everything set up. The only thing you gotta do when you go with Bomani Tayemba to Ghana is pretty much have to think everything's paid up front. You just have to pay for your lunch. Everything else is covered with the fee that you pay up front. Everything, the round trip tickets. If you're coming from California, coming from Seattle, coming from Chicago, the flights are about they're set up for out of ATL out of Atlanta. But he can set up. Mm-hmm. You'd have to talk to him, but I don't think the price changes. He's the only company that does that.
Yeah, the price doesn't change. It's the same price.
If they go out of JFK, you gotta, you know, you make your way to JFK. But Bomani, he works with his clients, and like I say, you know, they do payments. They have payments where you can pay all the way up until like a month before departure. They do different forms of payments. He's got everything on his website. Make it very accessible for our people, because you know most of our people, if you have children and things like that, it's not easy for a lot of our people who are just not getting into the international travel business to just, you know, to pack up and leave, and you have other expenses behind you, or children and things like that. But children do come on Africa for the Africans, and teenagers. They do come, the elders, doesn't discriminate against all of our folks. But Africa for the Africans is for our people, home. Bomani has tours for our trips or plans for other people if they want to travel other places or whatever, or even Africa. But this particular, since 2006, it's for black men and black women and their children and family. So it's for, you know. But
I did have a question.
How you doing?
Good. So I just want to be clear on, because the way you're almost describing what he's doing is, he's more of an ombudsman service, basically. So basically, you he's the person that's, you know, helping you form those connections. It almost sounded like, you know, you said you can just come over there, or so. I mean, does he have like a different package? Like, if he's going over there for a tour, he has one price. If you're going over there to make permanent roots, or you're looking to go there for the intermediate term for maybe 2 years or a year, whatever. Because your visa, how long is the visa did for over there? And like the process, like how much does it cost to get the visa to go there?
Okay, okay, brother Thomas, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Brother Thomas, the visa is generally for 90 days. If you,
okay.
We always stress, this is what we stress. We stress that you get a multiple entry visa. We don't like to push, unless you get your visa a month or 2 months before, we don't like to push the single entry. You can do a single entry, but you got to be real careful with the single entry. The multiple visa is probably $40 more. And it's their discretion, it's the Ghana Embassy's discretion on how long that visa is going to last, whether it's going to be 1 year or to the end of your expiration on your passport. And it seems like over the last couple of years, they've just been doing 1 year. Romani's first 10 years when they would go over, it was good till the end of the passport. But the embassy says it's their discretion. So we push the multiple entry because you don't have any problem with those dates in case you, you know, mess up. Because once they issue that visa, once it's issued out of wherever, consulate or embassy here in the States, it starts taking. Mm-hmm. It ain't when you go through their customs. The visa, the single entry is $60, and the multiple is $100. And right. And like I say, it's a journey. It's not a vacation. It's a journey. All the hotels that we stay at are all black owned. Most of them, well, in the past, we had some that were owned and operated by diasporans. One brother passed away, but we changed hotels. We have a Brother Romani has a host of a hotel that he can use. But there, everything that he uses is black owned over there. Everything, all the schools that we go to, everything, we keep everything black. So, getting over there, it's getting the passport and the visa, or the visa is not that complicated. Now it seems like I'm getting mine. I'm getting mine a week later, but you have to get, you know, they need at least 4 weeks. But they process them pretty fast. They tend to process them pretty fast. It's very simple. But it's definitely a journey. It's not a vacation. It's something that, the way he got it set up is what I'm used to. He takes people over. It's not like when you see people go around the world on these tours and the buses, and they just move like a big mass movement, and they don't get to connect with the locals and all that stuff. Nah, not like that. Here, from the time you hit that doggone airport, you start connecting with locals from the hotels, like if everything's black owned. And when we stop, even, I tell you what, along that journey, things happen, and they happen for a reason. And the most wonderful things happen. When you think something's going bad, it's the most blessed thing you can think of. It turns out to be the greatest thing that ever happened. Okay.
Yeah.
The thing is, like I said, you do all your preparation. The preparation and things like this, this is why I started going to seminars. There's seminars here in the United States. I was going over the economies there in Africa, even they call the regional in the sub-Saharan Africa, when they deal with your rankings of economies that deal with the ease of doing business. They have an index that the World Bank and all these big organizations keep track of. This is why you have to stay tuned to statistics and information that you get dealing with business and growth and all these things. They have a ranking that's set from like 1 to 184, and I think Ghana ranks number 3. Well, put it this way, it ranks number 67, I'm sorry, out of all the nations there. South Africa is right above Ghana. And then you got the United Kingdom, who, that's what they show the comparative to. But Kenya's right below Ghana, and then down and on and on and on. But it has to do with, you know, starting up businesses and dealing with construction permits of that type, getting electricity. That's one of the problems that you'll find out a lot of these, what they call undeveloped countries, and the registration of properties and things like that. Those are some of the most important things you can deal with. dealing with property, if you're going to deal with property, is even here in the United States, over there, so it can be a real mess if you don't get an attorney or do your homework, who owns the property, and who is title purchase.
I have a question about that. That's a very good question that you should bring up. That's the thing. That's actually not, I used to be the mortgage business. That's not the problem here. The problem that you have over, like, first, we had a situation of someone who was doing work in Liberia. And so, in, like, Liberia, they have a scoring system where it's, you don't have, like, outside title companies and other entities that do the work. You basically have, you know, government officials. Well, as you know, in Liberia, there's a lot of, you know, pay for play, right? And so this guy, he had a situation where he had been paying on land for a long period of time, and the guy who actually swindled him out of money was the former ambassador to Nigeria for Liberia. I'm not even going to say the guy's name, right? So the plot was is that, you know, the documents that he needed, right, it was a situation where the guy's wife was like the cousin of the second lady of the country. And so there's not a lot of transparency. So what I wanted to hear about was the whole process behind like the repatriation of people who want to go there, you know, to stay for a certain period of time. Because with Ghana, didn't they have a plan for people in the diaspora at one point in time? And can you speak to that a little bit?
Back in the 1990s, when President Rawlings, Lieutenant Rawlings became president of Ghana, he had came over to the United States back in the day, and he wanted you and I and everybody else to move to Ghana and come there, go home, and they were going to get a citizenship and these things, you know. He pushed that, tried to get that through legislation, doing his whole reign. He's very sincere about it, time, and he tried to do it, but the powers of the beast stepped in, probably from Great Britain or somewhere, probably here also. They threw a wrench into the deal, and they keep the wrenches in their parliamentary sectors, and seem like they still haven't given us anything yet towards that. It's never come our way. And like I say, it's not because of President Rawlings, there's other powers stopping this. And so what you have to do is, which we cover on the tour, the journey tour, what happens is there's a meeting that they have where they have representatives from the government. They show up every year at Bobani's small conference there at the hotel. And they talk about updates and things. They've changed since 2015, the laws changed even on residency. There was a way you can go into Ghana, and you needed $10,000 U.S. dollars worth of product or money that's invested into a Ghanaian bank, whether it's stocks or cash. $10,000, and you got your residency. That way you can go there and do business and do all, you know, go in and out the country. And plus, you don't have to stay there on, you know, on the visa. So when we went there that year, they had changed, and they put it to 200,000.
Oh.
And they told us, and I thought it was 250, but last year they said again it was 200,000. And they were saying that they got tied into Chinese. The Chinese had railroads, that system, and they were rolling in there left to right, and they were brought over to do like they did in Senegal to build infrastructure, roads and bridges, and all of a sudden grandma, grandpa, everybody came over. People over there illegally, so they had to put a stop to it. Now they're saying they changed because they just want people coming over there that are serious, being multi-conglomerates, the big businesses, the big companies that come in. Now, when it was at 10,000, that made it very feasible for virtually any person that has some type of viable income to go over there and do business and stay there, you know, do trade. There's other ways to get around it still, and it's harder. Even the marriage laws, they changed all that because that was one of the ways. And they figured they accused people of getting married so they can have citizenship and all this stuff. And this tends to happen, even when we go through here in the United States with the Philippines and stuff. But I think they're still working on it. People haven't gave up. They work on these repatriations, the citizenship. They work on this all the time. And there's people that Akili Wadu, his show, there's a brother that was born here in the States. He said he's got full citizenship. I don't know how he got it, but he's married to a Ghanaian woman, but he said got everything. I mean, he's a businessman. He lives between L.A. He's like me. He lives in L.A. and he lives in Ghana. So,
yeah, I'm aware of Brother Keeney. I'm going to try to go ahead and connect with him because, you know, he was at one time we were talking about a few things, and some of his members are here in Chicago and in Kankakee.
Right, Akiti is worldwide. Akiti is worldwide, and what he is, he's basically a think tank. Akiti has statistics on Mother Africa like no one does. Akiti probably makes most universities look shame. If your organization is going to look into whatever you want to do, work in whatever country, you better go and get some information. Akiti, now see, people who have, this is about like Brother Thomas, people who are professional in their fields. They do a lot of work. The people over in Ghana, they put a lot of work in, a lot of years. And when you go to the continent, you go to Ghana, you know, some people, they figure they're going to be able to get things for free. It don't work that way. You can't do it. When you need information, even from Brother Key, Key do so much work. He give you a whole pamphlet full of statistics and information. He sell it to you dirt cheap, stuff that you need. And they put a lot of work, you know, to spit out, you know, these books like Brother David over in Ghana. He's got books for everything. Books only $15. He's got books on buying land in Africa, books on organic farming, everything, malaria. He's got books.
You know, check this out real fast. This Brother Keeney, he and I connected on the, you know, the food thing here, and you know he's full vegan, right? So
right, he's a vegan chef.
Yeah. So me and him connected on a lot of that, and there's a lot of stuff he was telling me about different stuff that's growing over in Africa, made me go ahead and research it even more, because a lot of these things go ahead and cure some of our ailments here. That's another reason we need to go ahead and connect with what's going on over there. I think the weather, along with a better diet and some exercise, will make us go ahead and cure a lot of our ills here. And that's some of the stuff that Brother Keeney puts out, and it's amazing and fascinating.
And well said, because when you go over there, and just with Brother David, he's a brother from the Matrix, from here. A brother that went over there, he's been over there for probably 20 years or more. The thing is, this brother's a vegan also. He has, I don't know how many vegan restaurants he has. He has vegan restaurants. He has a farm. You can lease land over there. They're cheap. And it all depends who you, this is why you have to network. You have to go over there and hook up with the right people. Most of the people that Bomani is tied into network-wise, these people have been there. Sister's been there for 30 years. There's people been there forever. So they've been through all the war zones and all that stuff. They got everything set up, the do's and don'ts. But like I say, people shouldn't go over there expecting to pick their brains for free. Now, if you want to enter into a repatriation thing and go over there, they'll work things out with you. Because you don't want to go over there and spin your wheels and get ripped off and get robbed. Not your name. Go over there and get robbed and looted by somebody because they see the diaspora or the so-called American come over there, and they see a dollar bill. When you walk around, you look like a dollar bill to some people. So you have to build trust and relationships, and just like you do anywhere in the world when you build a relationship doing business, and you have to be, like I said, educated on these things. You don't want to be, I don't care where you go at in this world, especially in Mother Africa, and go over there and get all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. You have to be careful because when you're dealing with like what we have down here in Florida, and this is how you take note of, Jonathan, just take note for anybody to take note, listen to this radio call. The African Trade Development Centers, the African Trade, they have a TDC down here. And what happens is they do trade with Mother Africa. It's just that our folks and the way television and media works, we don't get this education that we need. All we're getting is junk to, you know, into our brains, our membrane. These things have been going on forever. So the TDC, the Africa, www.africatdc.com, it's here in Doral, Florida. And it's the African Trade Development Center. And what happens is the first Ghana conference I went to, I got some brothers, I went to it. It only cost me like $75, $80 to go to. And anybody in the business world that have anything to do with business, moving business between these two continents out of Florida, because Florida has a sister ship. They're like a fellow with Ghana. They have a free zone between Florida, between Miami, right down to Miami and Ghana. Free trade zone. And what happens is there's other, through those organizations, development centers, they have other regions of Africa where they have trade hubs. And these are things that we need to find out what we're going to do building this stuff, because when you have some soldiers here on this ground and some over there, you want to keep this thing going back and forth with money, you know, economics. And Brother Thomas can talk more of it than I can, but this doggone economic thing, and plus building what you guys are doing with knowledge of making sure that you do your homework through Keating's information about, you know, about electricity and paying taxes and trading across borders and forcing contracts. You want to deal with what the government has in
place. Yeah, we have a question. This is a real important question. So how have people been affected by the change in the valuation of the SETI and the currency? Because I remember calling over there to speak to someone at the Bank of Ghana, which is the central bank. And so, you know, my thing was, I'm a risk management person. Okay, so my thing was, okay, how can I take advantage of the 25% that they're paying on their account without getting money tied up in the devaluation of the currency, because they're kind of vulnerable compared to other countries. So, yeah, I think the SETI like devalued by almost like 25-30%. So even though you made a high rate of return, you know, it basically just kind of was a wash. And so, I was wondering if you knew of anyone who was affected by it, because when I called and asked them about it, I said, hey, is it possible that, you know, I could put money in the bank to have it denominated in pounds, which they still have a relationship with the Brits. Well, at least I knew that the ratio of, you know, $1 to like $1.55 on the pound would still be relevant. But the SETI, like I said, got like dismantled almost. Not to the same degree as like the real in Brazil, but it took a hit. So, people have been affected by that?
Well, the people there in Ghana for the last couple of years,
That's people in Ghana so much, but people who are from the States, because their money has less value now.
Well, I don't want to try to bootleg and try to be like an expert. All I know is Ghana. So what happens is when that dollar does. What they did was when the United States, the Obama administration, when they went out here about a year or two ago, and they printed some more money up, my money, my CEPAs and SEPAs in Senegal, I went from being poor again back to having a couple of dollars in my pocket. Because when I first went to Senegal in the 1990s, I was a rich man. Then all of a sudden, everything flipped back around. It flipped, the dollar flip-flop. And things based on the dollar. And the CD, just like what you're talking about in Brazil, the CD and the reals and the in Brazil, they've been over the last 2 years have been real strong. And for you and I, we were able to, and investors, we were able to prosper from that weak currency overseas because the United States dollar has popped up again right now. I'm not sure. Brother Thomas might know better than I do, but my indicators have been showing me that sooner or later they're going to reevaluate. And that U.S. dollar, they can't keep propping it up like they're doing. If something's, I don't know what's going to happen, but they can't keep doing what they're doing. Because nobody wanted no U.S. dollars overseas. You know, plus it was weak. Things are going to change quite a bit. And that's why I do my studies, even dealing with Brother Johnson was talking about Angola, and Angola is an interesting piece of work. It goes through a lot of change, and it's going to go through some more changes dealing with this oil thing. Because you know, as Brother Thomas knows, that at the top of the chain is oil and steel. And when you deal with this oil, and you see these rates going down, when you go get oil right now, gasoline, you see how cheap it is. At least down here, it won't. It's under $2 a gallon. It's under $2 a gallon. So what's happening is, and nobody's talking about it, what's happening is, this happened with our topic dealing with Mother Africa or Angola. As the United States look at he was pretty much tying up with everybody else to tie onto this doggone Angola oil. Pretty soon they won't need it, because what happened there in Texas and what happened in North Dakota, it changed everything. It changed everything when it dealt with this doggone oil. So Angola and a lot of these oil companies, some of them will start laying off people, and not sure what's going to happen with Angola yet, but it might be. You never know when the economy slips. It works out bad for some people, as Brother Thomas knows, and it works out for good for others. So it all depends where you're in that spectrum and what you got set up to go in there. Like our last recession, if you had your props in the right place, you're able to benefit off that's coming out of that Bush administration. You're able to pick up the pieces dirt cheap. Now, hopefully, over across the water, hopefully we'll be spared something, because things are, and most of those nations over there, being some of the poorest nations in the world, are also the most expensive, like Angola, their capital of the most expensive city in the world. It's more expensive than Tokyo. It's got some of the poorest people just as poor as they are in Liberia and Guinea and Sierra Leone. But let me tell you, a lot of places in that continent, they have the most expensive hotels, and they got the poorest people. So that rich and poor syndrome, what you see the United States going through, you see this doggone cage being rattled. That's where we're heading right now. We're going back the other way, going to rich, poor society. That middle, like my family's out west, most of them, they have two jobs. Just to live the way my father used to live. And my father was just a factory worker. My father he was able to take care of us better than what we're going through right now. People don't see that. Just like my son.
I was going to say a few questions as far as that from our conversation earlier. I had a few questions. What do you see as the future for blacks in America? And can you expand on our conversation earlier about black organizations as far as them splintering, and how do we overcome this?
Just close your organization. Just make sure you keep doing what you've been doing, brother. I don't know your organization, but just I understand and I hear what you've been laying out and how you've been doing your work and your preparation. Everything, whether you're going through academia, studying for a test, you always have to prepare for it. It's good to have your preparation, whether it happens or not. It's always prep work when you're in the laboratory. Everything's about that preparatory. You have to be ready. It's like when you train in the military, you train as a SEAL or whatever, you make preparation. Whether you win or don't lose the battle, you go in there with all the knowledge you can dealing with this world economics and dealing with your design, what you're talking about, developing your own society and community. It's been done over and over again. You can do it. You can actually do it. People do it at different scales, from the small scale, if you want to start out small. Just make sure you keep control and everybody's on the same page, because a lot of organizations, they get weak. They get a wrong one piece of bad, kind of like what happened to Chipotle. You get one bad piece of meat and everything goes downhill. One bad thing just messes up everything for an organization. So just make sure you have a good, strong commitment through the people that you bring in. The thing about good, strong organization, you bring in good, strong people. You bring in people that you can really do. So it's kind of like philosophy with some of the people that I follow. They may not necessarily black people, but they get to pick their people. I always had to work in the corporate world. I had to work with people I didn't want to really work with, like most people do. You had to work with the biggest buffoons, the biggest knuckleheads, people don't get along. I tend to go, what I do now, and even when sitting out, when somebody want to leave, don't want to work out, see, there's a no. You can leave. You're free to come in, you're free to go. And there's no hard feelings. So we keep it like that. So you come in, you do an apprenticeship, you start off just like dealing with electricity, be an electrician or a plumber, whatever, or you learn a trade or whatever it might have been. You learn, and you're free to go. So there's no hard feelings, but we keep everything like that. So you keep it organized, like that's what they call organization. You have to be very careful, because in the past, you look at all these organizations we had all the way back, like I say, since Nation Islam, very organized from the beginning. Elijah Muhammad built a beautiful empire for black folks. Beautiful standards. Mm-hmm. And what happened was, if you look at Bill Cosby made a statement about that, about some of the people that follow, at least the what they lay down. You can look at it politically or religious or whatever, but the disciplines of these people. And so what happens is, just like in the workplace or in business, we have these same statements and these same things we have to follow in the workplace. We just can't do what we want to when we go to the workplace. You have to follow the bylaws in the corporate and the boardroom. There's disciplinary do, and under BAIO, do the same thing. Just keep that, whatever you set up, be strong at it, and don't waver and don't wiggle out. Because you already know what you want to do. You already know what you want to gain, right?
Right.
Your mission statement told me today what you want to do. It's that all the blueprints have been laid out by all those brothers, like you mentioned, Brother Wilson, Brother Ben, Brother Clark, it goes on and on, and Brother Garvey, it goes on and on. It's been done. It's done for us. We just have to go out there and do it. But you have to be smart. Like I said, get statistics. Do your homework. Get your statistics from Ikea Wadu or somebody out there, from anybody, Brother Thomas, whoever. Get your dollars. You lay out a program that's solid, like what we do with these official Africondo here in Florida, the U.S. African Trade Commission. Remember they had that big conference there with President Obama a couple years ago when they brought the Ebola out in Washington, D.C.? They had that big conference with all the leaders of Africa, so-called Africa. Stay attention. There were deals cut. So you have to find out what's been laid on the table, because what happened is all these other folks are not going to go out there and tell you none of this stuff. Nobody's going to. The government's job is not to educate you what's going on with all these different bills and these things are to pass. You've got to keep your eye open. When they do come and they do make them public, it's real fast. It's like 2 seconds, 5 seconds. And most people don't understand the jargon and the legal work. But everything is set up and talk about, well, when you deal with markets and business and entry strategies and administration, all these technical things that you have to deal with, putting together a program, you can do it at that level. You can start it at a small level. Like I said, when Brother Rob goes over, if he goes over to Ghana, he'll see that one family and how they just structured their doggone. So, you know, it's probably about 80 people in the organization, but they got it going on. And they do things their way. They got their own little economy set up. Like I said, they make their own clothes. And even over in Senegal, we make clothes. And it's micro business. I only do things on a micro. I'm not a big giant person. I just do small things I put my hands on and control. But what happens is, when I look at all the people, and in every place you go, most of the people, I'm not talking about here because I wear Western clothes here most of the time. But when I'm over there, I don't wear Western clothes. I wear clothes that are made by the local people. And most people wear them if there's a function or a celebration, which they have a lot of them. But most people don't wear their customary clothes. Now, you can make Western clothes yourself, too, because a lot of people in Senegal, they make modern clothes that aren't so traditional, but you still tell they're made custom by their own self. But the important part is the economic part of it, that you making it yourself. You have the labor, you have all these things done right there at home. It's not coming from abroad, like all those clothes come from, just like they come here, they come from elsewhere, and all the profits go right back to elsewhere. And that's what kills people from the economy, and that's what kills a lot of societies, and like the so-called the black community, because you don't mention it. We don't make anything.
What was the name of that sister you came out there that's building that community in Ghana? One that you've been eating?
There's a sister, she has a little, she has a, on YouTube, you can see a little, she does a little, she has a little excerpt on Benin Village. If you put into your search engine and go to Benin Village, you'll see her English name, her West name was Hannah Smith. Hannah Smith was her Christian name, whatever you want to call it.
Gotcha.
She, a Benin Village, if you go there, you'll see what she was doing. It's probably a couple of years. She's been there since 2009. But she's building an eco-friendly Egyptian village there in the central region, the growing region of outside of a place called Techiman. And they are, when Brother Rob was talking about Akia Wado, he knows he's been throughout the continent also. Akia's been to Ghana with Bomani at least 4 times, I think. And what happens is, since he's a chef, he's a vegan chef, and when you go to, like, Sister Hannah's that village, Benin Village, you can just, like they say, they always told me, you can spit on the ground, something grow in that continent. You know, not the northern part, in the Sahara, on the region up there, but it's vastly, it just grows, things grow so well. It's a dream of hers, and that's what she wanted, just like what you're doing, what you brothers are doing. That's what she wanted to do, and that's what she did. She just locked it down and just went and started doing it. Like I say, you have to make sure you got your finances. I don't want to take up too much of Brother Thomas' time, because your finances is a very important thing. They don't want vacancy anywhere, not even in that continent. They got enough. They don't want people going. That's why they check people all the time. They even buy the country. They escort you right to the airport, put you on a plane, via your embassy, and make them buy the ticket. You got to pay IOU. But they don't want vacancies. They got enough. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So make sure that right you now, got your make sure you got your funding and your money, whatever you got set on this side or on that side, whatever you can do. Like I said, on that side, I just do the small shops, the clothes, and.
I'm interested in here because I haven't heard from the other guests.
Yeah,
I'm right here. I'm right here, family. Can you hear me?
Yeah, brother. I want to hear from you, brother. Yeah, I want you to go ahead.
Yeah, just a lot of people talking and a lot of people saying a lot of wonderful things, and also just listening in. But greetings, family. This is Bomani Tamba. I'm the director of Africa for the Africans Tourism Investments, and I have my own personal Bomani IT service and consultation business, which is what powers the Africa Tourism and Investment Experience there that we do annually in Ghana. And what I really wanted to share with everyone is Ghana, because that's, you know, you have 50 plus nations on the African continent, and I've been to 8. And it's you go bankrupt just flying across Africa doing many things. So after a while, you do have to focus on making a move on a specific location based on what you can really realistically accomplish. And some of the things that we do have to think about is the skills or the opportunity of skills that we can learn here in the diaspora. Like one of my brothers mentioned earlier, yeah, you don't want to go empty-handed, because realistically, the African continent and the different countries is not a welfare state. In America, if you're struggling, you can at least get some food stamps. But African continent, when you're looking to repatriate, you have to really, you know, bring it. So what we like to deal with, and I appreciate Ron earlier for just breaking down a lot of things. A lot of what we deal with is preparation, which is all listed on the AfricaForTheAfricans.org website. We do an annual October tour, and you'll see Ghana October 2016. You click on it, full details, itinerary, general terms, what to pack, what to bring, language, investment details, and so on. And that experience is based on someone like myself, a young businessman, young entrepreneur, just like many of us on the line in America, just having, you know, just being open to wanting to find out more about how can I reconnect with my roots and do things in Africa. And most of that inspiration for many of us come from, you know, Marcus Garvey, who coined the phrase Africa for the Africans, who inspired us and many of the, you know, the leaders in the 20th century to look to connecting to Africa and building a nation. And it's been something the UNIA was fundamentally in, and the UNIA still exists. And but that's not big, strong energy of theirs. And I've worked with the Atlanta division. And but repatriation is this was a big part of our Garvey process, even though he didn't physically just make the move and live there in African continent and foresee many of his things. But that's what great vision is. Great vision is for us to continue that journey. And I feel that's what we've been able to do as far as part of the movement of, you know, repatriation, because it's a massive movement. I feel Ghana is one of the ideal places because it has many of us from the diaspora, big community of Black Americans and Black people from the Caribbean, and also they have their relative organization that's not bad. And there's many things that those of us that are looking to make the move can do. One of the things when we do the business investment conference there on the trip, we have a good amount of people that, you know, come that's from the diaspora that's been living there to share and connect with us to make sure that whatever help we need or whatever we need clarity of, you know, they'll be there so we can all build together. But yes, you definitely have to build, bring certain things. So those of us who don't have a skill, that's one of the things we have talked about over the last 10 years is you want to get busy and learn a skill. And America, Europe, great places to learn certain skills. They have all of the advanced schools and all the advanced technology for you to learn certain things that you can make work for yourself on the African continent. So the preparation for the repatriation, the investment, and the tour itself is right there in our annual program, and what we talk about throughout the year and what I'm available for throughout the day is to go through that process with everyone realistically and get them connected. I can realistically get you connected to Ghana. A lot of the same information we share about Ghana is relative for other African countries, but you really want to do your research and kill all the fantasies and see where you're going to realistically survive and realistically connect with other black people with certain level of consciousness to really push a certain movement. So one of the things that we was able to accomplish over the last few years is to link with a sister called Nunet of Benue Village, which is in the Brang-Ahafo region in Ghana, Techiman. Benue Village, and my brother Ron went there with me for the first time. We've known the sister since 2012. But she has several acres of land, and so does many other people in that area. Pristine land, and we talk about nation building. So this is a sustainable land where you can literally bring your infrastructure of whatever you're looking to build, whatever kind of natural building home, use whatever kind of method of alternate energy, catch water system, maintaining your own sewage, organic farming, and for those who are into the satellite technology, put up a satellite, set up your own internet, and just anything that you literally need. And that's one of the realistic projects that our investment group is looking to make a move on in 2016, acquire a few plots of land, build something sustainable where we can be there, live, and kind of do business and build our skills in working the land. Because someone like myself, I live here in the south part of Georgia, South Atlanta, and you study a lot of sustainable technology, but you never get a chance to really get involved and deep and like set up these systems, because most of us live on, well, all of us live on the grid, you know, everything we have is wired in our homes and everything. So to go beyond the books and everything and just get practical, that's one of the things that we realized that we, you know, we're gonna have to do. We're fine with buying a business home in Accra, putting our money together as a group and doing that to live and operate. And above that all, one of the things I like to say is that communal operation is the best operation. I can get, most of us are in our, you know, careers somewhere between 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. So what will benefit is, you know, small groups, we always talk about 5 to 7 people and so on, just putting things together. But realistically, coming, checking out the journey itself and doing the research, make everything clearer. And then we have the folks in place. And so we can literally help anyone, which I've helped many people, set up there in Ghana and be successful and be clear on many things.
So, for one.
Sure.
Yeah, this is Thomas. So I think I asked your colleague the question. I guess I can follow up with you. So, correct me if I'm wrong, but you sound like you set up kind of like a ombudsman service, and you basically have the connections to make sure that, you know, you have a smooth transition. So one of the things he talked about earlier was the fact that the ease of doing business there in Ghana. So one of the noted problems and some other countries on the continent is, you know, corruption. So speak to that. I've experienced trying to get something done, just calling over the phone, and sometimes it's a different experience than what you may have here. So talk to how, you know, doing business with the government is, and is there like expected layers of corruption where you have to have like 20-30% pass someone's pockets?
Yeah, absolutely, and I can answer those questions for you. Yeah, there's going to be corruption across the board wherever we go, and America and Europe is the most corrupted nation, but I give America and Europe credit for being for covering a lot of their dirt up and things that they do, and being efficient with it as far as keeping it in the circle. You know, like they'll be corrupted in America, but they'll keep the business enterprises running and things like that, keeping people employed and things like that, not praising them. But our corruption in Ghana is, the corruption doesn't recirculate back into the infrastructure. You know, too much goes out of the country. You know, if you're going to be corrupt, keep the corruption in and circulate it. Do like they, you know, the gangsters and the drug dealers did in Miami. Not directly advocating for that. But if you're going to do it, make sure you put your money in, you know, in infrastructure. I went to Dubai like over 10 years ago, and it was like a metropolis in the desert. And I heard that when, you know, when they made all the oil money and everything, they put their money together. So that's one of the things we can really look forward to in Ghana, is for us to say that there's nothing wrong with us circulating and building and, you know, making cash and doing business from here in America and recirculate it there in Ghana. That's one of the things we're pushing these business investment forums. But as far as doing business there, the best thing to really do is to build a relationship with a group of people you can trust with your life. That's my best thing. You can call, you know, you can call numbers and everything, and I've known too many people that get got for gold deals. I myself won't even invest in those markets without proper research.
Absolutely.
We kind of just make things easy for you to just reconnect and make it respectfully in this. This is like, you know, a brother-sister connection.
This is somewhat of a pointed question, but I guess, for instance, here, like, you know, you're in Atlanta, right? So I've done, for instance, real estate loans in Atlanta. So if you want to get certain services done, like say you want to get a permit to build, right? Then you have to go to the zoning commission, they'll let you build a house, whatever, you pay your fees and everything. You pretty much get what you pay for, right?
Absolutely.
That same process in Ghana, let's say, for instance, you know, there's one layer you go in and it's like, okay, they tell you it's, you know, let's say it's $500 American, I don't know how much steady that would be. But let's just say it's $500. On top of that $500, how much more can you expect to pay? That's what I'm trying to get down to.
Folks who spend all the time going to universities and getting degrees and that are lawyers, that are accountant, and that are signing paperwork and doing things, in order for you to get anything processed, they have to get you have to dash them a little something, tip them a little money, give them a little something. So what we have, and it's inevitable, because there's a list of things that need to get done, and these are the people that are signing off and doing it, and they're more than welcome, they're more than willing to sign off on the ones quick for the people who got tips behind their paperwork. And that's right, the reality. So what we do is have people who know underground people, and we have them in our circle. So say if I go get my business registered and I'm looking to get bank accounts set up, I would take two of these Ghanaians with me, out of the crew of people that my brother David has is in consultation business Africa up, and I'll take them with me, and I'll kind of play the layback role and let them do everything, and I'll save my stress and everything. It's just the reality of doing things in Africa. You have to learn the culture of how things is and go with the flow of that. You try to do anything beyond that and go against the grain, it would over frustrate you and over stress you.
And I'm glad you like communicated that, because I want people to hear that, because I think what people don't understand is that, you know, you have an expectation of, okay, I go in, I talk to the proper person, I give them my money, you know, I get what I want, and it doesn't necessarily work like that. I had a gentleman that he used to work for Goldman Sachs that had worked from a loan school, so he had his own business. He's out there. Matter of fact, he's Churchill and Associates out in Atlanta, right? God, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but bottom line was, like, you know, when I was telling him about an idea I had, and first thing he said, okay, so we gotta get some bribe money, right?
That's funny.
First thing came out of his mouth, we gotta get some bribe money, right? So something like that. You know, he was like giving me some rough messages. I was like, wow, like, and it's a case in the system.
Like, well. And I think that's how it works in the world of this certain business, even with the American government system. For those who, for you to get into office and for you to work your way up certain things, you have to take care of certain people, and this is the complication of that. And we are looking for a simpler method than that, but unfortunately, it's all about who you know and who you're willing to pay.
Yeah, I got a quick question about buying land.
Sure, go ahead.
It's different, but because I know, like, I was looking at buying property in Mexico, and I got to go through a proxy to do it. They won't let American citizens just buy land. You got to go through a lawyer or some kind of bonding agency to get it. Is it the same way in guns?
Absolutely not. And everywhere are going to have their process. Example, in Benue Village, our sister Nunit, she holds the land with several acres. So when we're ready to do business with her to lease the land, we'll go there, we can have legal representation if we want, but between us, we sign the relative paperwork and process the relative documents that need to be processed. You know, lawyers are good because they know the law and they understand easy, smooth ways to get with things. So I would always recommend anyone who's looking to do business anywhere to get a lawyer that they can trust, because unfortunately sometimes you're dealing with lawyers that are working for the other party. So when you're dealing with international, you know, we're used to things being smooth and things going certain ways in America because that's how we grew up and we're used to it. So once you step out of here, just be open to knowing that things are going to be different, and your best bet is to just have some good representation by your side. So that's why I deal with my brother David Jawara, Africa Up, because he's been there for close to 30 years. Him and Sister Imacus of One Africa. And you know, you figure you've been there that long and you don't come back to America, but very, very rarely, you're going to know some people, you're going to build some knowledge. So that's where we try to deal with the people that are, have established credibility there in the country.
Okay, brother. Yeah, I wanted to ask you just a general question, I guess, on that. Going back to what you're doing with the tourism investments, in Ghana with the four groups, what would be the minimum amount of capital needed for potential investors?
Yeah, a great question. One of my favorite investments have been, we did a group investment of treasury bills for several thousand dollars. And treasury bills, I'm looking at the book that we have, and they're usually between 20-25%. And, we transfer the money in US dollars. And yes, we do have to get it converted in CD, because that's what has to be sent over to the Ghana government. But You might think that you might lose some in translation, but you don't, because this investment is 20-25%. So say if it's off by 5%, you're still gaining a whole lot. The currency market does scare us a little bit, but at the end of the day, it looks more like a even trade. And if you do lose, it's not as much, and if you do gain, it's not as much. I'm not proficient in binary currency trading, things like that, but over the last few years, that investment I've made, nice return. And that's the money that you want to have there when you're ready to build and move forward with. So I would say treasury bills, stocks, bonds, fixed deposits are good. And only real estate if you're going to do something with the land, if it's empty land, and if it's something that you're going to reconstruct and build or whatever project, you really have to get on it, because after like 2 years, if you don't do something with your project, your property, you'll forfeit your land.
Forfeit, yeah. And here's something else about that too, my brother, is that people have to realize, so for instance, whereas you go to like places here, there's a lot of infrastructure already laid down, but a lot like the places you talk about with the young lady, there's not like gas lines and all that stuff laid.
Exactly. Right? That is a paradise.
Like it. Wow, this goes in line with what I was talking about earlier on the show. It's about how, we have infrastructure and then, land development regulations. But what we're seeing is completely different in Ghana.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing I love about Ghana. I live here in South Atlanta, and there's no way they're going to have me just disconnect all this infrastructure that they have gotten so much money from and allow me to run my own solar operation, run my own, you know, provide my own water and do everything that you can do somewhere sustainable. And, you know, and if I need to do any construction or anything like that, it's just, that's just going to be, first of all, the folks that do the code for, you know, for the county, they drive around and they just look for stuff. So, but in Ghana, it's, you're open, you're free. And what we're talking about also is not the well-developed part of the country. We're talking about the center of the country, 7 to 8 hours into the country. So you're talking about a quarter acre of land for $500 US. So basically, a full acre for $2,000. And you can build a few, you know, you can build two homes on that. You can build a nice structure on, you know, 1 acre property. Have your organic farm and do many things. And the good thing about that community, you know, you can share ideas and build everybody, because everybody in that community is dealing with sustainability versus what we're dealing with here, where we're all, you know, connected to the grid.
So another question, with your website, hey, I don't know if this is something that you're working on or you had a plan for the revolutionists, but like, have you guys, like, I mean, WG have reached this, but have you, like, thought about venturing into, like, we call like a trusted curation, basically being that, like, people that, you know, on YouTube, say for instance, attorneys that you know are crooks, or like, you know, the people that you know that are reliable sources of, you know, if you wanted to get something built, you know this person completes their contracts. Every contract's not going to be completed in a 100% time manner, but 85 to 90% of the time they complete their projects. Like, have you thought about that as something that you offer, like trust and curation of people that you know? Because one of the things here is you have, like, you know, if I want to get, you know, something from someone, I can say that I want to request for qualifications, and they have to first be with, like, their projects and the contacts of the people to see if they completed the work to their satisfaction. So have you thought about something like that to...
Yeah, you know, there's many things that we can do, and I just probably just don't have it all laid out as far as everything that we can do, but it's really just in our communication, and we, the consultation operation we work with, Africa Up, that's the collection of connections all behind that. The business investment conference that we do don't work without them, because David is the one that knows every single last one of those people, and the people who... I've done the building, so it's something that we can really get into. And during the time I was looking to move and get set up there in Ghana, it's like I had like a list of so many different things that I would get myself into to keep doing business and keep things going. So, you know, and we're probably not making the best of all the contacts we have, because we do have a whole lot of contacts and things like that. And yeah, you know, but. I'm also looking for people to reach out and say they you know, they want to connect with this, or do we have this, and I'll say yes, let's get you connected. And the unfortunate thing is most of the people that we've connected dealing with repatriation, they just, I don't know, just like games. I don't know if they realize that we're serious and that we can do all these things, but they kind of just, you know, backed out. And the ones that are there living, those are the ones that I still have in the videos when we go and visit. And it's, you know, it's just really about what the individual want to do and how serious they're willing to do it, and if they're willing to make the necessary sacrifices it is to make the move. And right. We're willing to do all of the work, because I don't want to be there in Ghana by myself, and you know, I want to be there with my brothers and sisters that I spent all my life growing up with and struggling with here in America, because they understand me more than anybody else I can think of on the planet, even, you know, my family from Jamaica.
Well, with that, I was going to say, how can we link our organization to fulfill our ancestor Marcus Garvey's dream?
Yeah, and then, yeah, absolutely. We're all inspired by Garvey, and you know, even though most of what I do is just really, it's a tour. Everything is surrounded around a tour, and the tour is ideal because we spend so much of our time here, and we just run around and rat race, and it's, you know, sometimes we all deserve to have a 2 weeks away where things are organized and planned out, and people are there taking care of things for us and wanting to find out what we want to do so they can assist us in the most incredible way. So that's the main course of that. But, you know, in the essence of that, and even the conference calls that we do, and even the social gatherings here in Georgia every once in a while, in the Atlanta area once in a while, it's it's and the repatriation movement, it's still just, you know, it's just a small energy of things, but I'm always open to things. So sometimes I don't have it all figured out, and you know, maybe we should probably do more work to connect with other people. And but I'm definitely open. But the ideal way is to come on a trip with us, because the operation I talk about is just beyond myself. It's really meeting people like Imacus at One Africa, Sister Nunet in Benue Village, David Jawara, and Ronnie's still on the line, right? Yeah, it's like you had one experience meeting me and me and you talking and everything, and you know, I'm very just laid back and everything, but it was a whole different evolution experience when you actually went there to the country and met all these people, and right. So you saw how you can really just do things there in Ghana. So we're kind of like the entry point to connect, and that's what I really want to connect those with. But I don't know if everybody's just open to Ghana. Ghana is special to me because I was born in Jamaica, and it reminds me of my home in Jamaica, which I don't get to go to every so often because I'm here trying to build something, and you don't want to always go back home empty-handed or go back home where you just...
Hey, brother, let me ask you a question.
Sure, go ahead.
Somebody told me that, that Ghana is becoming more Jamaican than Jamaica. I love the music on your site. I've been watching your site for a while.
Oh, thank you, brother. That music is like my heartbeat and soul. It's straight consciousness. It's what we're missing today in the more popular music that we hear on the radio. I mean, this is consciousness mixed with the, you know, the Black Revolution.
You know, so right. Man, we should really devote a show to that kind of music, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
I try to push.
You designed the website, right, brother?
Yes, absolutely. The only thing I didn't design in the operation I've done is the two logos. This sister from Jamaica designed the two logos, or the one for, you know, Africa for Africans and the one for Bomani IT Services. But everything else is my technology and my design, just independently. And that's all inspired by Marcus Garvey, inspired for us to just learn what we need to learn and build. So that was one of my more popular operation, but everything you see, the videos, the Facebook page, it's all of our work, just dedicated to repatriation and getting us reconnected to the African continent.
And Brother Rob, is that you?
Yeah.
You see that MP3 mixer you got on that website? You can play whatever music you want, man. You got all that music.
Well, I've been looking at the site for a few years. I was trying to figure out a way to connect with you guys. For
oh, click on connect.
I'm glad Brother Jonathan done it for me.
Oh, man, let's click on contact us.
I've been looking at the site for a while, man. I think I heard you guys on the Nikki Love show one time, I believe it was.
Yeah, I was on Nikki Love show many years ago. It was like
a long time ago.
You,
that's what I first seen. I told you I've been looking at the site for a while, man. Like, I told you.
That's like when I got started, like 10 years ago.
Feeling though.
Oh no, brother, appreciate it. And the contact list and all this stuff is there. We're just looking to build in the essence of people who just feel the same flow as us.
You know, it's something else. Those excerpts from Marcus Garvey. Those are nice, man. I was listening to that, and I listened to a lot of those, and you got to really, you know, pay attention to the words, and they made a lot of sense.
Well, thank you. What I did was I listened to the speech a bunch of times, like over and over, and I just went in there and I edited a few different segments, because you know, with our folks have extension spans, so you can't have like a whole 50-minute speech, you know. You just, so with the Garvey and Malcolm and a few other, we just made them about 2 to 4 minute segments, and then keep the music playing. And we had so much conscious music, where I had to start putting some love music in it, because if you give people all conscious revolutionary music, they'll just lose their mind. So to balance it out, you know, it's love and revolution mix.
Right.
I took one from you. You don't have that Luciano track up there no more. When I get to Africa?
Yeah, it's so many tracks on there. You have to really, because everything on the website is set for random mode. That way, you go to it, you never see the same thing or listen to the same music or see the same pictures. Unless you've been on there consistently. So that track is in there, and all of them are active.
Hey, I got a question for Brother Thomas. Brother Thomas, can you brief us on what's your advice how to help some of our people, like Sister Renee was talking about earlier, about we deal with this all the time, about this unconsciousness of, especially dealing with finances and help people get back on track so they can have priorities and set up something where they can do this travel that we're speaking of, or this journey to see other parts outside of this matrix here. So what is your outlook on this flash?
I think that's a function of their income. It's a function of their income, first of all, because there's people that they make the money, but they don't have any discipline to save, so that's one thing. If first making, minimum wage, not a whole lot they can do, but if they're making at least a living wage and they have disposable income, meaning like money after they pay all their bills and everything, they need to work with that. But if they live in New York and they're making $40,000 a year and they're paying $2,000 in rent, they struggle more. You know what I mean? So
don't talk about New York.
Exactly. It's pretty struggle. That's the first thing. Oddly enough, Mari was saying the very first episode of we have a segment called Solution Session that I'm doing on Monday now. I do it still on Monday, but it's 12:00 in the morning. And with skill development, because if you don't have skill development and you don't find a way to make yourself economically viable, it won't matter. So that means, we talked about a number of things, people, getting a secondary income. Like if you're in a market where it's a medium-sized to large city, if you have a regular job, maybe getting a side hustle like an Uber or a Lyft or Postmates. There's companies out there that provide people substantial income for you to be able to make sure you can do some of those things. So that, I think that's it. I mean, but how bad do you want to do it? Some people, don't want to work a second job, but if you really want to go, if you really want to, make that voyage, then that's something that you may need to do, And also, getting together collectively, because I'm pretty sure do you have something like, different group rates?
Yeah, absolutely. We try to do the sweet, each other just work deals, all to the end of last year. All to the end of last year, we were doing $200 to $400 discount for those who are registered early, and just try to just make deals with people who can maybe work the referrals but this is all in conversation. But we do have this one flat price, and then we work so many deals. One of the things I always want to encourage those of us who want to travel, and include myself, is the sacrifices that we all have to make, from just not celebrating the holidays and reducing the amount of times we go out to eat and the amount of money that we spend on white-owned business, reducing all those costs will make our trip money, and cutting down on the clothes buying, jewelry buying, and all the upgrades and things that we do fashionable. The Asians seem to have a lot of business in our community, and their business seems to always thrive, so somebody's going to them. And so all those cutbacks, by the time you cut back, you have $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $10,000. And so it's not really based on how much money you're making. It's really based on how many sacrifices you're going to make.
That's not 100% true. Now, let me be real. Some people don't make enough money. If they're making $10 an hour and they got rent of $800 a month, that's what I'm saying. We got to be realistic about that. It's just it's no different than we understand everyone is called the revolution, some people don't get left behind, unfortunately.
Right.
And it's the same thing, so I'm saying, I'm not trying to be argumentative, I'm just saying, we don't want to get that out there.
You have to be making some kind of money. You have to be making some kind of cash, but the thing of it is...
You need disposable income.
Yeah, and you also have to be...
That concept.
I have some people who, their cost of living is very low, very, very low, and they make less money, but they end up having more money left over than the people that I know that makes $100,000 a year because of their different layout. I have people that work in my industry as aircraft maintenance technology, and the homes they have, cars and all kind of things, but they'll tell me that they don't have no money to travel me to Ghana, and they make 3 to 4 times the amount of money as some of the average people that are coming with me. And plus their consciousness also.
Yeah. I think it mostly has to do with disciplines, because even back when I made $4 an hour, even back to a free job, I could set my precedence. It's about discipline and learning from the generations before you. It's a discipline thing, how to spend money. Like you say, you have to be pretty much shown or educated on how to spend money, which they don't teach you when you go through school. And I got jumped on because they told me they didn't get into that. That's on your own. I never did believe that. Dealing with, you live in a capitalist system. It's kind of like Akon said, they didn't build America for you. They didn't build America for black folks. America wasn't built for us.
Right.
So now you have to find your way. If you would have to do two or three jobs, and I know many people that do, they do two or three jobs, but if you go out and have one job and you say you only make $10 an hour, don't be buying those Jordans.
Absolutely. Cut your costs down.
That goes without saying. That goes without saying.
I was going to say, you could practice group economics, though, on a micro level, because, you know, and this is Joe Neckbone talking. And what's up, Khaled? I'm back in the hood, bro. I'm back in the South Jamaica, man. I moved back. Anyway, my mom and her crew, my mom recently passed, so I moved back to take over the property here. But, you know, her and her crew, they would get together, and they would buy, like, bulk sugar, bulk flour, and then divide it up. Because a lot of people don't know, you know, when you're buying like a 5-pound bag of flour, you actually spend a premium amount for it, all right? But if you buy a 50-pound bag of flour, now you're talking. So, you know, whoever has the vehicle,
can I get those prices?
Yeah, rice. You know, when you start buying things at that level, you can, number one, perhaps negotiate the price. Number two, your per unit cost goes down. It just goes down to math. I just go down to understanding how money works. And again, within our culture, we don't really understand how money works. I see people talk about, you know, we slaves and all that, but I said, slaves don't have flat screen TVs. If you can afford a flat screen TV, if you could afford Jordans, then you could afford to save that money. You know, instead of buying Jordans, why don't you buy stock in Nike? You should own stock in everything that you use. You like McDonald's? Go buy McDonald's stock in addition to your burger. You know, but it's hard to get people to change that mindset. This is where the victimhood comes in. You know, because basically what they're doing is, you know, they are trying to cover for that victimhood mentality by buying stuff. That stuff gives them a high. And that high covers over the fact that, you know, you may not be living at a level that you want or living the way that you want. So I'm going to get this impulse purchase by it. Your mind says, oh, good, wow, you got something. You know, we're going to release some dopamine and you're going to feel good. You know, but you got to eat tomorrow. You got to live tomorrow. And they're not thinking of it.
Because we're scattered all over the place. You know what I mean? And I think that has to end, and we have to get to some, you know, so that we know each other as organizations. We may not be focusing on the same thing, but at least if we're together, if outside people come into our midst, everybody has a place that they can fit in. You know what I mean? Like some people about repatriating alone, and they really ain't even thinking about no nation. They just want to repatriate, get the hell out of America. Some place there for them. Then you have people that's more interested in industry and infrastructure and stuff like that. The problem is we're scattered all over the place and we need to get together. That's the only point that I wanted to make.
That's an excellent point, brother. Excellent point. That's what we should be doing. Getting together. Seems like we have everything else all together.
Well, definitely, man. I want to be able to, I guess, you know, either get on your platform, definitely take a few trips. You know, at least one trip to Ghana with your organization. I want to see if you could do something with us. Like maybe, you know, push it like you just said. Get on the Ming side and join our group. So we have you linked in and you know understand everything we're doing.
Absolutely.
Okay, so the website is BAIO Afrikstan AFR. IKSTAN 5.ming.com. And on there you can just join. We have different groups on there with, you know, you create a group if you want to for Ghana. And basically we're just exchanging information. Information on how we're gonna build up a nation.
I put the link in the chat room if anybody wants to get to it.
Yeah, and I was going to say, you have an event page on Facebook, so that's why I was going to put one or two things on there for those who just need to get a quick click to check out the site or check out our YouTube page.
Okay,
But you say you're using the chat room and Blog Talk, right? Yeah, I guess we can just put it across. I'm not logged into Blog Talk or anything. But
okay.
Yeah, if that's fine, I can just share my information on, you know, share certain things on Facebook, and then if you can put up the link to the Ning site also on the the Facebook event page.
Yeah.
And the reason why I say that is that all those things are just searchable.
We do have a BAIO logo for Donna.
Oh yeah.
Yep. All
right.
So you
can slide that to him. Can I make a suggestion here?
Yes, go ahead.
You know, when you do your next tour, bring a writer along, because what happens is, if your forte is infrastructure or technology and all that, you know, that's nice, but what really, you know, for the folks that can't go, they want to read the experiences, like a diary, or a log or something like that. Bring a writer along.
I mean, that's always...
Writer can chronicle the trip, you know, for everybody else that can't go. And also, too, you know, if you're going to talk about nation building, understand that there's a physical nation building, meaning you're going to a land, but there's also a virtual one. And so right now, you know, this particular conversation that's happening right now is a virtual, you know, session. We don't all have to see each other or be in the same physical space to share ideas and to share, you know, concepts and information. So you can have a physical group, a physical working group, a physical nation building, and a virtual one for those folks that are either invested here or can't afford to go but still want to connect with the concept.
Yeah, absolutely. And I appreciate the idea as far as writing the 2-week journal off that that's a great idea.
What's your name, brother?
This is Joe Nichol.
Hey, brother Joe. Tell some of the listeners or some of the people in the membership, Bomani has an extensive, he's big time on YouTube. Then some of those people go visit YouTube. And he's, I don't know, how many YouTubes you have in your
It's 500, and it's 500, and like the last trip is, the whole documentation was done on video, so it's, you know, you hear people, the whole thing was documented in clips. But what he's talking about is a full clip journal, which is the ideas that we had in 2007, and is
right.
None of our assistant would ever just write the whole journal, and myself,
right.
I'm the person that does the video journal. So, but go ahead.
That's excellent. Just so they know, other people, relatives, anyone, they can go to YouTube, to your YouTube channel, and there's almost 500 or 600 different YouTubes on the experience, interviews and everything. So that'll help out also besides. That journal's a great, great, great asset. But YouTube is also there for the people who can't go.
Yeah, that's all of the, it's all of the quote-unquote highlights of the trip. The entire trip is highlighted. You know, I'm always open to different ideas and things. But yeah, one of the things, if we could just get more publicity and share more information, would be good. But for now, YouTube seems to be a great platform to get information out. Facebook and then the website.
But that's a great idea. Joe has, maybe we record, do the audio, and then transcribe it.
Somebody would have to be typing or writing that because, you know, we're tied up. Like, you and I are tied up the whole time, running around just making sure everybody have the right. Best time of their entire life by doing all the things we need to do to make sure things are taken care of.
Right, but you have mostly everything on video, but you can transcribe things.
That's the 21st century world that we live in. The world that we live in is people are... Not, I don't want to just like push that thing that people don't read like they should, but people are more into video documentation. Even my little boy, he's into this video technology. I don't know, because of all of these devices, but that's what people seem to be more into. So since they have all these devices, we're trying to cater to the devices by having videos of everything. Like, I got several videos I'm waiting to upload, that I've shot in Atlanta over the last 2 weeks. But to share it, you know, to share information.
Yeah, I'm a dinosaur, man. I read. I got books.
Man, you are a sharp brother, man. You're the last of the dying breed.
Yeah, man.
I love books too.
You're right. I love Chateau Hercule.
I'm reading a whole bunch right now.
And a lot of stuff I've heard, man, was, you know, I'm for going ahead and dealing with trying to create an industry and
right.
sustain us. That's what I want to go ahead and do, and to build entrepreneurs off that industry. I don't want to hear nobody talk about no damn jobs. I want you to go ahead and have your own shit. That's me.
Amen. I'm with you all the way, brother.
Yeah, man. Use your current job to build your business enterprise.
Yeah, do business. And the other one is, like I was telling you, Brother Hill, you need to look into this Florida thing that's been going on for the last couple of years. This Africa trade, trade. I'm not talking about just business. You do business development and tie into this African trade thing that's been going on. There's so many things. These conferences, there's so many things that our people miss out on. And you think these people know more and got more than you do. And what happens is they're doing all these goods and services with hardly any money out of their pocket, because what you do is, when you're dealing with these magnets out there that put together all these strategies, there's different things that they get their cut. Just like the brother I'm working with out of Revere Beach. He's got a multi-billion-dollar project going out of Sierra Leone, and it just got backed up by the Rockefeller money. I decided not to go on with the project because I don't want to be tied to none of, nothing like that. I don't want to be tied to no Rockefeller, no Gildenburg, none of them. So what happened is the brother, he's real sharp in business. He's an ex-Wall Streeter doing his early years. I mean, he's also a scientist. But what happens at these conferences, all the information is given out to people, all the people that you need to know. Just like I said, we deal with Ghana mainly. All the big movers and shakers are there, everybody from the embassy, everybody from all the Ghana government, and all they want people to do is business. They want people to set deals. They want people to move these dogs and do trade. This is world trade. And these people, a lot of these white folks are making a killing off of this, even off of the African market, and the stuff our people are missing out on. We're missing out on it. The Ghanaians, they show up there. They show up at the conference. And other people, some so-called black Americans do too. It's huge.
When is the next conference?
They have it annually in October, during the month of October, here in South Florida. It's the Florida International University, FIU. And then they have other conferences. They have the African Trade Development Center. They have conferences. They have a big one. This is African stuff. Africando, that's in Miami also. I think that's every year. But like I say, we're so busy just in Lil Wayne and all this other crap that we're missing out on what the world could keep moving. I keep trying to tell some of our young brothers, they need to tune in and go and pay just a couple of dollars and go learn this stuff. When we go to these conferences, you meet so many high-powered people that deal with trade, just in trade movement of goods and services. It's amazing. It's amazing.
I'm looking on it right now. It's the website, democracy/africa.org.
Miami is a free zone. It's a Miami free trade. It's a free zone for parts of different countries in Africa. Mainly, like I said, they have an agreement. The sister country is Ghana. So you have all these things going on, and most of our people don't even know about it. They don't even know. They have no idea. And it's not a secret. It's just that tonight when I went out, I was just couldn't even get into this one restaurant because the whole in front of Walmart, the whole parking lot was full of people. And all their dogs are in cars. I'm talking about our people and all their hoopies and stuff. They're all, I'm not putting them down. All their, I'm talking about economics again. All their, down here we have ducks in South Florida. And, you know, one wheel of a duck can be $1,500. But that's where all the money goes to the carpet. And you can't talk to these people about anything. You can't, I'm generalizing, but I'm saying that what I used to be worried about, they don't see what's coming because this whole world is changing real quick economically. And so like what the brother said, I think it was Joe was right. Joe said you do have to be in business. Work for someone for a while, be a journeyman, learn to trade, and
exactly.
Do your thing.
Even more than that, because the mindset that I encounter most is, you know, particularly for black folks in America, they think that the face of power is white. And I tell them, when you get outside this country, it's Asian, it's Arab, it's Russian, it ain't white.
Right.
And, you know, they seem to, you know, be really fixated that white people have a lock on everything. And I'm like, nah, they don't. You know?
There were two white people at the conference I went to. All the rest were just exactly what you're saying.
Yeah. Especially from Asia. It's a lot of heavy influence of just Asians just doing business all across Africa, outbeating the, you know, the white nations. So
that's why you have
wait a minute. So you mean the white man is not Thanos?
Yeah, the Asians have
the white man is not Galactus? I'm shocked.
Oh my God. Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
But the thing of it is, the Asians are practically doing things from Japan, China, India. They're enterprising across the globe and beating out Europe and America out of a lot of contracts and a lot of business.
China was that sleeping giant again, and they put that transcontinental highway in from the east to west part of that continent. And it's really, all those societies are going to boom. It's the future. Like I said, Brother Hill, Brother Rob, and Joe, you check with the Kikiwabu, he gives you all the information you need on what's going on.
Can you pronounce his name one more time?
Akiti Olaju. He's a think tank. He's a statistic person. He's very highly statistical. Everything's statistics. Everything. He's got all the numbers. He'll tell you everything. And like I said, Rob knows him. Bomani knows him. But when you go to West Africa, is being taken over by the USA. So at least Guinea, Senegal, they tried to do Senegal. They're in Senegal, Guinea, Sierra Leone, Liberia, where the Ebola was. That's where they built all their new embassies at. They're mega embassies. Where all the poor folks, most poor people on earth, no infrastructure, but they got the biggest, baddest embassies on the planet. Because they generated new business. And they're not showing nobody that. Oh, they scared the hell out of people with Ebola. Well, they're just pumping that stuff in people's arms. That's all they did. Scared the hell out of them. You know, Bomani was going to England. I said, Bomani's getting ready to break over. They brought out the president of Ghana there in D.C., or President Obama. I told Bomani they're getting ready to bring somebody over here with the Ebola. There ain't going to be no black person. And they brought the white face. They can't bring you and I over here. Nobody give a damn about you dying or some damn Ebola or anything else. So they brought those white folks over, and the whole world stopped and looked.
And also, Ron, not just any white people. You're talking about white doctors. Yeah, what?
Doctors.
Those CIA guys. Hey, Duncan messed up everything. Duncan messed up everything. They were highly contagious. But Duncan jumped on the plane out of Liberia with all the other Brussels. They never stopped any of those Brussels flights. Never did. He went to Brussels in that same airplane with all those people. Went to Brussels all the way to the United States, all the way to Texas, same with the passengers. Nobody on those planes caught nothing. Went all the way home, left with the old man and nephew, stayed in the same apartment, got sick, went to the hospital, they kicked him out, went back and died. I don't get that one. I'm just saying in a nutshell that dealing with West Africa, just like the whole continent, has all the elements. Nothing can touch it. The Indians, even these yellow people, they talk about this stuff all the time. It's not a secret. They talk about how everything, the land, the agriculture, the whole continent is just amazing. And China needs it. So Akiti calls it a land grab. So we just don't want to get left out of it. We need, God be honest, whatever you call yourself, the conscious people, just keep planning, keep doing what you're doing and move ahead. Don't wait on nobody holding you back, holding on your tails, telling you, oh, don't do this, don't do that, your family members, you know. No, you got to make a move. You got to make, this world ain't waiting on nobody. This world is moving. It's moving real quick. Mm-hmm. That one world order, those, that 2% of people, they want to make sure they maintain control. Those ones that say, because they know they're not really going to, you know, they're trying to hold control of this whole economic thing, this whole world. And that's why you see this whole thing shaking up so bad right now. You're trying to tear up and confuse everybody. And our people aren't being conscious enough to, you know, I'm generalizing. Most of the, like you people we're talking right now, we know what to do. We know how to do it. We've been shown. We're conscious to it. The rest of them on the same game. That same game that gets you nothing, because when I jump, like I say, when Bomani and I take people over to different parts of Africa, I said, we'll probably be 10 of us on the plane. Everybody else will be one, even out of Europe. That's the plane man down there. They got everything. You go to Asia, you go to Africa, any place. You going to see more people like that. You go to the Middle East, Dubai, Abu Dhabi, all the same number like that.
That's who
they say, they hate the Middle East. No, they're all over there working at jobs and industries, and especially the British. They're all over, yeah. All over to Qatar and Kuwait. They're all over that place. And then you get on those planes, when you get there at that station, you see what's going on. Even when you go there,
I saw the similar stuff when I went to Dubai.
Right. I'm not tripping on them. I'm saying we wish some of our people would make up way, because those people doing what they got, they're doing to Donald Trump. Donald Trump's going to do whatever it is to keep white supremacy where it's at and keep his dog on family and his lineage and his legacy. This is what we need to build. Me and Brother Hill was talking about earlier. We need to build legacies. We need to build like what you're doing, your nation, your own nation. And that's what those Donald Trumps and the rest of them do. That's what they've always done. We just have to do the same thing. We just got to keep going until we get there.
And that's what Garvey talked about.
How do you take the fear of capitalism away? You know, because again, you know, whenever I've had discussions, you know, on Blog Talk or other platforms, there's always this association, you know, with wealth building and white supremacy, to the point that, you know, it just seems like, you know, the average black person is scared of money. And I'm like, no, it's just a tool. It's just a tool. That's it. You know, there's nothing to be scared of. You know, it's just a building.
The average black person is pretty much brainwashed to get it right back. In fact, when hip hop got so big, when it was pulling all that money, and Snoop Dogg and Russell were saying that, what do you like the music? Now, I'm just talking about economics. When they looked out there at those concerts and see 95% of their doggone ticket holders were white, well, those small hats, they seen the same thing. They said that money comes from the white parents and the young white people, and is leaving white America going, when blacks was controlling most of the hip-hop, the videos, the direction, the directors, all that stuff, money was pouring back to white, the young black folks. And what happened is they took that whole thing over, like they took over all the other music genres that we could, because we're so creative. We're the most magnificent species, things on this earth, if you want to say that. And then we're so creative, we don't even know it. But they stay close to us because they're going to snag everything. We give up everything. We give up money. We give up our blues. We give up our R&B. We give up a lot of hip-hop. We lose everything. You lose reggae. They take everything because we're so nice. We're so nice.
Yeah, I'm living in New York, and I'm living in New York today, 7 a.m. What do I hear waking me up? Indian hip-hop.
What?
Yeah, Indian hip-hop. Indian gangster rap.
Indian gangster rap.
Mm-hmm. What borough do you live in?
I live in Queens. Jamaica, Queens.
Yeah, when I told Sister Amicus from Ghana, and our son does that. So when you get to 125th, when you get to Harlem, you won't recognize it anymore. And she called me up and she said, Brother Ron, I got a black son that's 6'4", big black man, and it's 1 o'clock in the morning, white folks are asking this question. And I had meet some people about that before. When I went there like 4 years ago, I started seeing this. You know, and see all that new money coming in and they're selling off all those public housing and stuff to the private contractors. Yep. All these international people, these rich people, this top 5%, 1%, they need more places in northern real estate. And that Manhattan Island is very expensive. And they got kind of like when you go down to Brazil, look at favelas, and you're overlooking that ocean and Copacabana and all that stuff. But they're having this conversation right now. They're already going to move 13 boroughs favelas out of there for the World Cup game. They're going to move all of them out eventually. But rich people want that. And rich people, when you go to England, they'll tell you that we have to keep poor people out. So I don't know what that means, you and I, when you're in. For some reason, they use this term, they say middle class. I say income. This class, they ain't a higher class than me. Ain't nobody. We're the same, but me and you just as high as Donald Trump and the rest of them. They do this middle class. Well, we can say middle income, but or whatever, but that whole middle is getting wiped out. We're going one direction. Africa's building, going the other direction. Hopefully, it'll take a long time because a lot of people economically just. But the economics, money is different. When the World Bank looks at people and they talk about money and how much the GDP, all that stuff, that means nothing because those people don't deal with how many bedrooms you got in the driveway and how many bedrooms you got. The rich do over there. But most people, they it's kind of like when you go to Brazil places, because dude, they just live from day to day. They're not stressed. You know, they're not stressed like our people. Some of our people here, you see people all the time committing suicide, killing and stuff. This stuff is an everyday thing here. Wall Street brokers, they still kill them. They don't even make the news. In the last 30 years, they ain't made no news for killing themselves. Not even Lehman Brothers. Old man killed himself. They don't talk about that stuff. They're not alone. Them cats are stressed out. So we need to get to the point, like you say, you build your nation, and you do what you got to do, Brother Hill and Rob and Joe and the rest of you. You build your nation and design the way you want, like everybody else. You don't need nobody's permission. It's already the blueprints out there. We just got to have this discipline, and you got to get the right soldiers to do it, because all whole bunch of people don't go against you. Just every movement, all have some haters in it. Every movement does. That's why we can't compete on it, but you can still do it, because people, when the money takes us over there, you see people doing it. They're doing it. Whether you do it there or here, wherever, you know, ain't nobody tying you down. Because nobody wants to give up that $1.4 trillion that they call, like, Brother Thomas, that $4 trillion, that $1.4 trillion we keep bragging about that we make in America. We make
it. That's an elusive number. It's that, you know, it's not really, there's no such thing as a...
Right. We know what you're saying. Right. We know what you're saying. We're saying all the money, we got plenty millionaires in this country, black millionaires, but they're not going to reinvest into anything that looks like them.
Unfortunately.
The last one to try it was Bradley Johnson, and they had everybody dogging him out. He went into the red zone where you're not supposed to be investing, you know, in parts of South Central, and parts of New York and Harvard, all this. Now they're letting all this dog of money come out to these venture capital and banks are pumping money into these foreign investments like you see over in Ghana and other places like this. They'll let them have the money and let them build, but they're not, they don't want us to build anything to have our own. That's really, when I say they, you know what I'm talking about, Carl Zadig. And then they did that with insurance companies. They're in D.C. They redlined the biggest insurance, the commissioner there, they had on 60 minutes years ago, but it took his doggone license from him because he started allowing the bids on their homes in the wrong area. And they knocked all them homes up. Now you go there, you go from 17 all the way up past Howard University, and all of them folks are moving in there. Like my neighborhood is the same way. It ain't no different from Harlem. It's turning away. And I ain't saying that white people are controlling them. I'm saying that we need to wake up. Like, I'm telling you stuff you know already. Just need to wake up, man. I don't think we can wake up there. So many people are so, sorry I have to be so negative. Some of our people are so dead, and people complain to me. One out of 1,000 brothers you run into are sisters. And they said, look at them, just walk around. And they have no conscience. You can't even talk to them about anything. They just don't. They just, damn, just walk around.
Casualties of war. Unfortunately, they're going to be casualties.
They are casualties. They're going to be casualties. When you take the ones that you can wake up, and don't try to, if you keep trying to win on everybody, you're going to be old like my ass and all the ones went to bed before me. And they're still squatting on the rock right now, still talking.
Yes,
do your research, do all your planning, and start building. And that's why I told Keith, you just need to build. My scientist friend tells me all the time, he said, they don't want to do no business with none of you blacks in America, because you don't have nothing. You ain't built nothing, you don't control it. The last two, when you got control of any two big empires of music, they're going to break those down, too. They're breaking down cash money right now. That's why they're going to make sure cash money go broke. They're the last label,
Wow. Alone,
master people that are black. And they got Lil Wayne Brand. I'm telling you what they're not going to tell you.
We want you to go ahead and try to do this again real soon. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to have you guys on again, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, appreciate your energy, family.
Up, Brother Kitty, why do his name out again?
We're going to reach out to him.
And he's right there on Facebook also.
Okay. Yeah, connect with Kitty and YD for sure, brother. He's got all the stats you need to know, the statistics. And you need to know his information.
Okay, definitely. And I appreciate having you guys on here. It's definitely been great. This is a great deal. We had a bunch of callers in. And I'm really excited, you know, not only for this year, but, you know, for something new for our people, you know, and building up this nation state. I'm really pumped up about this. I'm happy that we've gotten to actually meet, and I hope we can continue on.
Excellent. Thanks for having us. We'll Keep it strong. Keep in touch.
Guess that's pretty much going to end it. I appreciate everybody for listening to the show, whether it's podcast or you're catching in later. This has been a great build session, and this is what we're really talking about as far as our ancestor, our elder, our honorable Marcus Tyler Gossi. He wants us to establish a nation of our own.